So this evening, I'm going to pretend that we're having a meditation interview together, and you've asked me a question. So let's say that you've asked me a question about regret, about being assailed in the meditation with memories of actions long since past that now engender a sense of painful feeling and all kinds of emotions arising based on experiencing these memories. Okay, and it's really disturbing the meditation. The mind keeps going back to it. I presume that's a healthy subject of conversation, or am I the only one who has any regrets in life? Because when I started thinking about this talk, I thought, oh, okay, what kind of things? And then I was assailed by this avalanche of, oh, I didn't, did I? Oh, I did! Because, unfortunately, that's what happens, isn't it? And I remembered, I think it must be a Christian saying, but it goes along the lines of, every sinner has a future, every saint has a past. A common thread throughout this talk is having compassion for oneself. Absolutely essential. Nothing is really going to be done unless we first have a sense of compassion for ourselves. Making mistakes is part of life, which we shall hopefully come on to. So we sit down to meditate, and we're assailed in this way. We want the meditation to be calm and peaceful and alert and clear. We want to see what's what, but the mind keeps getting trapped in these thoughts, and there's a strong urge to try to do battle with the mind, to resist, to bring the mind to heal, to make it do what we want it to do. So we have really the essence of the entire Buddhist training. Suffering arises out of resistance. In this case, it's resisting what we find in the meditation itself. It doesn't have to be like that. Nobody has to suffer. But suffering arises out of an underlying ignorance of the true nature of reality. That's why we resist. So what do we have to do? We have to gain insight. We have to gain insight, wisdom. Wisdom into the true nature of reality, and we can release ourselves from all kinds of different suffering. The Buddha laid down a training that anyone can follow in order to overcome their suffering. So, yes, and that training has three major elements, what we call sila, samadhi and panya. Sila is ethical conduct, samadhi is mental development, and panya is wisdom. In dealing with any aspect of suffering, including regrets over past actions, we can employ aspects of ethical conduct, mental development, and wisdom in order to resolve the issue. Where do we start? Let's start with panya. Let's start with wisdom. And the Buddha talked about there being aspects of mundane wisdom that we can reflect on and use to our advantage to help us in dealing with our suffering. The two main components of mundane wisdom are the facts of the law of karma and rebirth. How do the laws of karma and rebirth help us with our dilemma of being in a meditation with these unwanted thoughts, memories, the feelings that arise with them, and our response to them? What we're experiencing in meditation at that time are the results of our actions. Our actions do have results. We experience the results of our actions in terms of sensory contacts, including memories arising in the mind, the feelings that they produce, and the tendency to act in a certain way to try to get rid of the problem, i.e. resist them. Understanding that is our first great improvement to our situation. If you can start to understand and appreciate that it is impossible to escape the results of your own past actions, and that you are indeed experiencing the results of your actions, and this is what the results of your actions is actually like, that can begin the process of letting go, surrendering, and stopping that part of the mind that wants to resist and make it all different. Accepting the truth of the law of karma, not just because somebody says so, but by observing your own behaviour and observing that you do indeed experience the results of your actions, and that these are indeed the results of your own past actions that you're experiencing now, is tremendously helpful. Had it been in the past that there had been a fair amount of mindfulness and comprehension and understanding, it may very well have been that you wouldn't have performed the actions that you did. But given that there wasn't, you performed those actions. Now there's two interesting components to mind that are naturally occurring in people, but not a lot of people actually are really clear as to what they are and how they help us. The Buddha called them the guardians of the world. So what are the guardians of the world? They are fear of blame and fear of shame. Now these are entirely positive qualities. If there is fear of blame, that means an inefficient action isn't performed because of the sense of what other people would think of us if they found out. So there is this fear of blame which prevents us from acting in a certain way. The fear of shame is its counterpart, which is the person feeling, well, I don't want to perform this action because of the way I would feel about myself. So fear of blame tends to be, fear of blame and fear of shame are naturally occurring. But what happens is self-view, egotism, us wanting to have things our own way, supersedes these natural qualities, obliterates them and hides them, and we go and we just do it anyway. So the greed and the hatred take the place of the fear of shame and fear of blame. So unfortunately, the truth is, given the way that you were, you performed that action, and it could not have been any other way. Had there been mindfulness and clear comprehension, then maybe fear of shame and fear of blame could have done their work, and you would have heard them and go, oh, perhaps it's not such a good idea for me to do that. But it didn't. They didn't. You performed the action, and now you're experiencing the result. What we don't want to do, therefore, is to fall into self-blame. But we'll come on to that a little later. The other aspect of mundane right view is the fact of rebirth. And some people will say, oh, why do you have to bring in all that kind of stuff into... I just want to deal with my regret. I don't want to get into all of that business. But what is it about being open to the idea of rebirth in connection to the law of action and result, which is so helpful? If somebody is just entirely focused on this one life and doesn't consider the possibility of life extending out into the past and extending out into the future, then everything has to be right now. There is no room for development, really. Mistakes shouldn't be made because I've only got this one chance. I've got to get it right, yeah? Now, if you consider the idea that maybe our actions have brought us into this particular scheme of things, and that the way we behave now will have an effect on our future, both in this lifetime and beyond, and that instead of being in a really constricted psychological space, you extend out in time tremendously, then your relationship to what's actually going on in your life, the kind of lessons that are being learned slowly and gradually, all start to make a lot more sense. And it also starts to allow the possibility that you can surrender to the truth of the actions that you performed in the past. That it's okay, that it's fine, that you can learn these lessons now, and that you can move on. One of the most critical aspects of coming to a point of acceptance and surrendering to the truth of these memories and what they're telling you is it allows you to make the same mistake again. You're allowed to make the same mistake again. You can make the same mistake again as many times as you like. That's the beauty of understanding the law of karma and rebirth. You set the intention based on the experience of the painfulness of looking back at the memory of that particular action. And you feel that. You feel like, yeah, don't like that. Rather than blaming yourself and feeling that you have failed and that somehow there is this sword of Damocles hanging over you, ready to fall at any time, you can actually just say, well, I did what I did. I wanted to come out of suffering. I thought that was the best way to do it. Looking in hindsight, and given the way I feel now, I can see that the results of this is not so wise. It wasn't so clever. Perhaps if I was put in the same situation again, perhaps I might choose differently. And I might react in a different way. Great self-compassion, no blame, including the possibility that you might just go and do exactly the same thing again. And that's fine. Because what are we trying to do? We're trying to learn. We're trying to learn about what actions produce what kind of results. This is where Sila, ethical conduct, comes in. And why I'm such a staunch supporter of the idea that developing your ethical conduct is not a matter of trying to comply to somebody else's idea of ethical conduct, but that it is a journey that you undertake through mindfulness of coming to understand what are the actions that produce the harmonious results, what are the actions that produce the painful results. So it's an organic process rather than trying to conform to somebody else's idea of what's right and what's wrong. If we're mindful, if we've got clear comprehension, you go through a process of gradually learning what works and what doesn't work. So again, that takes this terrible burden off of this mistaken idea of morality, that somehow you're supposed to conform. The whole point of this human life is to explore and investigate the possibilities and come to one's own understanding of what works and what doesn't work. Yeah. So again, it's releasing from this sense that memory arising now in your meditation is somehow wrong. Yeah, it's painful, but it's not wrong, it's right. And although the action may very well, you might very well conclude based on the result that you experienced that the action was wrong, that doesn't make you bad. The Buddhist way of seeing life is you don't have good and bad people. I don't see good and bad people here. That's a bit of a ridiculous concept, isn't it? Now, I'm sure we've all done stuff in the past which is bad, but in what sense is it bad? It's bad in the sense that it produces painful results. So that gives us the possibility of learning. So it's a good thing that all these obstacles appear in our meditation. We want them to be there because that gives us the opportunity to learn. Which brings me on to my point I want to make about mindfulness. We had a very nice workshop on Saturday, and I made the point early on that in general, mindfulness is taught in the following way. You watch the breathing process, and if you start thinking about anything, you immediately bring your attention back to the breathing process. You don't pay any attention to the thoughts whatsoever. And if you do that successfully, what you get is a really nice, calm period of time. And so people would conclude that that is a successful practice of mindfulness, that there's no suffering at that time. Fair enough. But with Buddhist mindfulness, we're actually going a step further. What we want is understanding. We want to understand the processes at work. We want these obstacles in the... I know you don't want to hear that. But we want the obstacles in the meditation. We want the resistances to what we find to come up, because we want to understand. We don't want just want a brief period of calm. We want deep understanding. We want wisdom. In order to gain that, you have to be willing to include whatever arises in the meditation. It doesn't matter what it is. There are no wrong objects of contemplation in meditation. I don't care if you've got a numb bum. I don't care if like there's a pneumatic drill going off outside. I don't care if you've just had a murderous thought. It's all the same stuff. It's just life stuff arising due to conditions. You can look at anything, including your responses. So there's a memory. There's a painful feeling that comes with the memory. And there is a strong urge to fight and get rid of the painful feeling. Or in some way, there is an attempt to justify the past action. Or there is self-condemnation based on the past action. What does that do? It merely recreates the memory. So you experience another painful feeling. And what happens? There's a strong urge, a strong tendency to fight with the mind, get rid of the memory, get rid of the painful feeling, justify oneself, condemn oneself. What happens? Well, that leads to the arising of another memory. Of course it does. And that's how we get into this condition-dependent origination. This is how we get into clinging attachment. So if you just focus on the breathing, you'll never ever find out about all this. If you relax and allow the space for unwanted thoughts, memories, feelings to arise, and there's a willingness to label, to explore, to be with these experiences, yeah, of course. Having labelled, we then bring the mind back to watching the breathing process. But it's the state of mind, it's the attitude behind it. It's the willingness to use this as an opportunity to explore, not just an opportunity to get calm. That would be shortchanging here. So, we've got these painful feelings, we've got these unwanted memories, and we've got the tendency arising to resist. The key then is having developed that self-compassion, having acknowledged that what happened in the past can't really be changed, that it was what it was, I'd have to be a different person now, I'd have to have been a different person then for it to have a different outcome. It was what it was, that's what I chose, and these are the results. And it's a question of then surrendering, letting go, not fighting the truth of what you've discovered. And in so doing, you take the sting right out of the situation. You let the memory be there. You let the situation, whatever it was, you just stop trying to resolve it. And what happens? You notice that it doesn't last. You notice that if you just remain with the painful feeling doesn't last. It's replaced with something else. You stay with that underlying urge to get stuck in and control the situation and change it, and that urge to justify yourself and condemn them, or justify them and condemn yourself. You acknowledge it, you stay with it, and what happens? Don't fight it, it passes away. And it's that that frees the mind from the problem. How have you freed the mind from the problem? By no longer attempting to free the mind from the problem. There's just the willingness to observe it, to let it be, to let it be exactly what it is. Now, that's not the end of the matter. That's still mental development. We still want to develop deep insight wisdom. And the reason we want to do that is because you still believe, there is still a tendency to believe the content of thinking. There's still a tendency to believe that actually something had taken place at all. When you came here this evening, you either walked up the hill or you walked down the hill. What can you remember about what took place? Walking up the hill or walking down the hill to get here this evening? Can you remember the sounds? Can you remember the sights? Can you remember the smells? Do you remember the tastes? I don't know if you remember the tastes of walking up the hill. But certainly, perhaps there were some tactile sensations. Do you remember those tactile sensations? Were there thoughts? Were there feelings? Was there consciousness? Where are they now? Where are the visible objects now? Where are the tactile sensations now? Where is the seeing, the hearing, the taste, the smelling? Where are the feelings, the thoughts? Do they exist now? And if they have been replaced and there are different tactile sensations, different thoughts, different sounds, different visual objects, at what point did all those other sensory experiences stop? When did they stop? Was it the case that actually they stopped immediately and were replaced with another thought, another moment of hearing? Do you get what I'm saying? That if you look closely at life, if you are willing to observe closely what is actually taking place, you realize that none of the things that go to make up our experience have any enduring quality whatsoever. None of it lasts. None of it lasts. It's all so fleeting, so momentary. Yes, it's repeated by it with another moment of experience and another moment of experience, but you can't grasp any of it, you can't keep any of it. It's got its own nature. Things arise due to conditions and pass away. What happens when we think? When we think about a past incident, our thoughts create this sense of solidity, of an enduring, lasting experience, of something that was gross and solid and unchanging. So when we have that memory of that past incident, the memory has this sense that there was something solid behind it. That's what language does. That's the nature of thought. That's the nature of language, to create discrete entities. But when you actually look at your experience, you find that it doesn't have that same quality at all. And you start to be able to see the difference between what is real and what is conceptualized. What is actual and what is just the content of thought. The content of thought is never real. That a thought is arising is real, but entirely fleeting, insubstantial. arising due to conditions, and then ceasing. And what this insight wisdom does is clearly define what is real, fleeting, and what is unreal and dreamlike. Whatever it is that's disturbing you about your past, and we've all got the stuff, it's not real. What's real is what's taking place right now. This is reality. But you need to gain the insight wisdom to be able to tell the difference. Because until you do, you'll just continually believe your own thoughts. And that makes a huge and massive difference. Because you get to the point where it really doesn't matter what arises in your mind. It is just a thought arising. You understand the content. You don't suddenly become stupid. You understand the content. But you know that the content isn't absolutely real. It isn't real at all. And that's what deeply releases you from any sense of any need to resist what's taking place in your experience. And that is how you deeply resolve the problem of regret over past actions. But just to round it off then, so self-compassion, being honest about what's actually taking place, being inclusive of these difficult, hard-to-handle aspects of life, being open and explore, create a sense of spaciousness and compassion for yourself and a lack of blame by understanding the law of karma and being open to the idea of rebirth does have an impact. Being inclusive, being willing to surrender and stay with an experience rather than just habitually try to blot it out or get rid of it. And a willingness to look more closely and more deeply at life in order to truly understand what's real and what's fantasy. Yeah. I remember writing in my book that although it was very trying and very difficult at the time, I look back at all the things I got wrong, all the mistakes I made, all the terrible things that were done to me, all the terrible things that I did to other people, all the pratfalls, all the embarrassments, and I turn around now and I bow down to them because they taught me so much. What you get back from undertaking this training and undertaking it in earnest and getting the real results from practice is this wonderful release from any sense in which you are either a sinner or a saint. A wonderful freedom to be you, to be spontaneous, to enjoy life with this marvellous sense of underlying peace and contentment. That doesn't mean you don't experience the results of your actions, because I can still think of things that I did and I cannot believe I did them, and I still get that sense of but it just simply doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It's not me, it's not mine, it's not myself. It's just the arising of moments of experience. It just arises and passes. It's got no substance, it doesn't endure, it's just a painful feeling that comes and goes. And there's this lovely sense of liberation from the entire thing, even as these things are arising and passing away.